Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here at 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Janet Entine.
Hi, John.
And we are sitting here with Renee Silva, who's the author of And Yet I Still Love France, as she's recalling her childhood in France during World War II, which is, you know, so bittersweet. I mean, listening to the story, it's so encouraging how people get through things, but just trying to experience what she went through is amazing. At the break, Renee was taught, again, we said earlier that Renee came in with the most beautiful sweater and scarf. I don't know what you call that, but just the workmanship is absolutely, I've never seen anything like it. But at the break, Renee was telling us a little story, which I'm going to ask you to share now, because she learned how to knit at the age of 4 or 5. But tell us the story you were saying about lack of clothes and clothes being lost.
When we were picked up in France, in the little town of Longeville, where we had gone when the war, just before the war broke out, my mother packed the suitcases for the 7 of us, my grandmother, my 2 cousins, and my family of 4. And this trip of taking us from northern France to all the way southwestern France, which took 8 days, incidentally, on a train with very little food and virtually no water. When we finally arrived in Gurs, it turned out that all of our luggage had been lost. The only thing were 2 little hand suitcases, one for my father's and one my mother, but there were no change of clothes for any of us. And my sister and I were both wearing hand-knitted outfits that my mother had knitted for us. I was wearing a dress, and my sister was wearing a little blouse and a skirt. And so every morning, my mother in Gurs would wash out our underwear. It was not a great problem, although the water was turned on only sporadically in Gurs. She would wash out our underwear and then dry it in the sun. Meanwhile, the other women in the camp were fascinated by my mother's beautiful work and would come to admire my dress and my sister's skirt and lift it up, while, of course, we were not wearing any underwear, which was terribly, terribly embarrassing and, you know, an awful experience, probably one of the worst experiences at Gurs for my sister and me, but it couldn't be helped.
One of the things that fascinates me is that you obviously survived. What is it within you that made you survive and not be so bitter?
I don't think I'm bitter at all.
No, I've never been bitter. You're not. I agree.
I was very grateful that the 4 of us survived, my mother, my father, my sister, and I, whereas the rest of my family had either emigrated to the United States or Brazil or been exterminated. We found out at the end of the war we were the only ones left. As I said earlier, I think my parents, my mother's extraordinary courage and even agreeing to marry a man who was paralyzed on the left side, a number of years older than she was, she was just such a courageous, generous, and wonderful woman. I didn't fully appreciate it until I got much, much older. But I think both of my parents managed to not hide anything from us, but always made us feel secure by being there for us and being there with us.
It's extraordinary.
And I guess we were fortunate. Despite all the terrible things that happened in France, we always managed to find somebody who was very protective and gave us great strength and comfort.
That is, because what I'm taking away from this is that a child is so susceptible to being damaged. You know, what you went through, I mean, even when you're saying picking up the dresses and stuff, it's like, it's embarrassing. I'm not a thing. I'm a person. And yet, you know, here you are today, the author of a book, and I know, I say, Renee, from the congregation and an active participant, et cetera, et cetera. Life has moved on, and you've taken this piece of your life, and as opposed to spending years of why me,
exactly.
why my mom, my dad, my sister, it is what it is, life, and let's move forward and find the good in it. What you should be doing here this afternoon instead of being, or this morning instead of being on the radio, is selling some knitwear. That's where the real
thing. How long did it take you to complete the book once you decided that
once
that was your
I
mission?
Once I decided to, you know, my husband died in 2010, and that very year, by the next year, I had decided to contact someone who published it, and that was 2011. And as a matter of fact, the woman who wrote it with me was not very happy with me about some things, and has broken off relations with me, unfortunately.
It's your book. You had to do it your way.
It's my book, and I finished it. I corrected a lot of it. Her style was very different from what I would have wanted.
Right.
And it just took so long. It took her, if I hadn't taken things in hand, I think we would still be waiting for it to be finished. And as I said, my husband had died, my sister had died, and I was already 79 at that point. And I said, after putting all of this effort into this, I don't want to die before the book is, I'm doing something about it.
That's tremendous. And that really, that's the way to do things. Sometimes you just have to take control yourself and not leave it in the hands of others. It's nice to have a co-author who's working with you, but when paths change, and in something like this, because this is a legacy, and this is like listening to your story today, these things are so tremendous because this is the type of stuff that needs to be passed on. Mm-hmm. And people think they have it tough today, and some people do have terrible things going on in their life. But you are a symbol of, guess what? Things can be terrible at a point, and then you move forward. You were in Switzerland also?
Well, before going to talking about Switzerland, I think the emphasis I also like to put on, and in my book and when I speak to people, is if it wasn't for the good people and who are not sufficiently celebrated, we would not have survived. If it wasn't for that extraordinary group of Protestants under the leadership of Pasteur André Trocmé in the heart of central France, my sister and I would not have made it. If it wasn't for this incredible family, the parents of my best friend, who were the janitors of the local theater and who had overheard in the bathroom where the French counterpart of the police were getting ready to do a major raid to take care of all the Jews in the area. They had overheard this, and they had come to my parents to say, look, they knew where my parents lived, but they didn't know, had never met my parents. They came to my parents and said, you must come with us. You are not safe where you are. And they took my parents into their apartment under the nose of this milice, this horrible French police. And they saved my parents' life. I mean,
all of the unsung heroes.
The unsung heroes. They're the rescuers.
Right.
I wouldn't be here. Not those of us who did survived because there were some good people, some extraordinary people.
Yes.
And I like to emphasize that.
And I just want to throw something in there. Just say the janitors, I'm sure they didn't think they were doing something so spectacular that it'd be talked about 50 years later. But the point is, it doesn't hurt every day of your life to do a nice thing, because you never know the ramifications and how it affects somebody's life all the way. The trickle effect of goodness is amazing.
Well, the front page of my book, I quoted something Pierre Sauvage, about whom I can talk separately, had said when he was interviewed by Bill Moyer about a film he had made called Weapons of the Spirit. And it said, people who agonize don't act. People who act don't agonize.
So true.
Yeah, and that's the Cossidiers. If they had deliberated for 5 minutes what to do about my parents, my parents would not have survived.
Right.
And coming to Switzerland, eventually, while my sister and I were hidden, and while my parents were hidden, they were able to get false papers, and my father, paid what they called passeurs, which are people who cross with you. And they took us from the city of Lyon, where we were, to the border of Switzerland, which was quite an experience in and of itself. But then when it came to crossing from France into Switzerland, because the situation had become so dangerous, and it was, again, the French who were, you know, picking up people and sending them directly north to be sent east, meaning the Polish concentration camps, that the French passeurs, the smugglers, did not want to go with us. So the four of us, my invalid father, my little sister, my mother and I, carrying whatever belongings we had left at that point in a couple of suitcases, had to cross into Switzerland by a crossing through, in October, a freshly plowed field after several weeks of rain. And that was really probably the most hair-raising experience of the war, you know, those 6 or 7 hours that it took us to cross.
Now, that crossing was just the four of you, or other people were you
no,
also?
No, just the four of you. Us. It was, you know, this was the four of us. We were told that we couldn't, you know, speak to each other. My little sister, holding my father's good hand, was on one side, and my mother and I carrying the two suitcases on the other. It was a pitch black night, and we were told to walk towards, you know, the middle of three lights in the distance. And before long, first the three lights became dozens of lights, and we completely lost track of it. And finally, as the night dragged on, all the lights went off, and only one of them was left on. And when we finally got to that farmhouse, as it turned out, we had no choice. We knocked on that door, and they received us. We were in Switzerland.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Not only did they receive us, but they told us we were very lucky. They were up very late. They were doing their harvesting, their thrashing. Is that what you call it? Threshing. For the season. But the Swiss Border Patrol, which were not too terrific about wanting us to come in either, had just left their house.
Wow.
And gone on.
It took a little luck.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of luck.
This is absolutely, Renee, we're ending on a note that it was just a goosebump moment, but it really, really, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to come on. The book, And Yet I Still Love France, is available on Amazon.
Yeah.
So it really, I mean, having heard the story, a book like this, it just, you know, reinstills in people how important it is to be good and to be kind. And then Renee is a perfect example of it. And sharing her story and what she went through and her parents, you know, just, it's amazing. I want to thank you so much.
You.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. We know each other.
And everybody, you're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.